Welcome to the Infotagem podcast, focused on the work of the Joint Committee on the Draft Online Safety Bill. In this episode, we will be looking back at the evidence session held by the committee with Laura Edelson for the Cybersecurity for Democracy program at New York University, Guillaume Chalot, the founder of Algo Transparency, who formerly worked on the algorithmic recommendation systems designed by Google for YouTube, and René de Resta from the Stanford Internet Observatory. First off, we'll hear from Laura talking to the committee about the effects of user interaction shaped by algorithms.
First, thank you so much for inviting me to give testimony today. There's two points that I think are really important here that I don't think have been brought up yet. First, content and groups often get recommended on the basis of edge effects. So this is not what you necessarily have shown interest in, but what your friends, what other people in your social graph have shown interest in. And I think getting clarity on this point could be extremely helpful. Because again, one of the things that we are hoping to do is better understand how harmful content does get recommended, does get promoted. And so understanding these edge effects could be very helpful. The other thing that I think is actually bigger, but I think often just doesn't get discussed, the single biggest thing that goes into content promotion algorithms that we know about is user interactions. So these are things that are really visible to the user, like likes, other kinds of reactions, comments, shares of content, that kind of thing. But it's also information about how the user themselves has interacted with the content in the past, or similar content, I should say. So the platform knows, so Facebook, for example, knows how often you watch videos and how long you watch them for. TikTok really masters this, right? TikTok really understands what content you will swipe and what you will sit there and watch. And so this user interaction data is incredibly important. And getting better visibility into this, again, would help us better understand how to slow down the most harmful content.
We now hear the exchange between Laura Edelson and Baroness Kidron on the committee about the importance of seeing the data that sits behind the content posted on social media platforms.
I was worried in the earlier part of your conversation that there is a sort of a perverse, we could do something very perverse to make platforms share research in a way that makes them look bad. Yeah, and then they fail, they continue to fail to do it because why do research that's going to make you look bad? And I just wondered that a lot of discussion that we have had and the evidence we get is really about what sort of oversight. I guess it sort of splits into how do we frame independent research, given that a lot of research isn't that independent? How do we frame that in a way that is useful to your community? And my second thing there is, how do we frame the necessary oversight regime with the regulator so that they can actually have some sort of market intelligence on this as well? So that actually what they're looking at is the relationship between purposes, data, weighting, outcome, you know, the whole sort of system. And then that should throw up more known issues in a less fractious setting, in a broader setting.
That's a great question. I think, and again, I apologize for sounding like a broken record here. This is why I really think it comes down to data transparency. No, we do science. It is not our job to take anyone's word for it. And that's why independent research, you know, taking the platform's research without seeing the data that backed it, I don't want to say it's useless, but it does not advance science about what is going on these platforms.
And in this exchange, I asked Laura about the fact that the more vulnerable you are, the more likely you are to see harmful content on social media.
The bottom line would seem to be that the more vulnerable you are, the more likely you are to see harmful content. The greater an interest you take in content displaying self-harm, the more likely you are to see more of it. Would that be a correct assessment, do you think?
It's good you asked about self-harm because while I don't know that we have public research to say this generally, for this one category, some of Facebook's internal research about this point has been leaked to the public. So frankly, yes, I think this gets to the heart of interest-based content promotion, right? If you are interested in content around weight loss, you will be promoted more and more extreme content around weight loss. That is, generally speaking, how content promotion algorithms exist. So if you have an interest in, if you have like a casual interest in something that might be harmful, you will be promoted more content about that, which certainly has the possibility to feed into that harmful interest.
In this clip, Guillaume explains to the committee how the algorithms of social media don't try and find necessarily perfect content for you, but to take you on a journey where you will engage deeply with that content.
To say, like, Renee, it's more like based on the interaction and the social network than to give an example of harmful content that I got recommended. Once a friend shared some site with anti-vax information, and I went on the post, and the URL was not even right. So I just said, no, you're sharing a false URL. I commented on the post, you're sharing a false URL. And then afterwards, Facebook thought I was interested in anti-vax content and started recommending anti-vax content directly to me, like suggested for you, like not even through a friend. It was just bombarding me with anti-vax content because of this one comment. So to show that, yeah, maximizing on engagement is really stupid sometimes.
Do you think it's the case? We had this put to us before in a previous inquiry that actually, although we all think we're very unique, people are actually quite similar. And then if you start doing something like engaging in anti-vaccine content, the algorithm kicks in at that point because suddenly you've done something quite interesting and it rallies around that rather than your other interests, which are sort of quite similar to other people who are like you.
Yeah, that's what I've noticed studying the YouTube algorithm. It doesn't try to find like the perfect content for you. It tries to find the rabbit hole that's the closest to your interest.
Here, Susan Webb, a member of the committee, asks Guillaume about algorithmic recommendation and whether it is the amount of time a piece of content is online that matters, or is it the number of people who see it?
Still sort of bringing on that, how long will it take to take this content down if you're looking at that in general? This is my biggest concern, is that we can have the best and most robust bill in the world, but how realistic and the time frame to take it down? And we've all talked about vulnerable people, so all this content is focused on vulnerable people, basically. For me, we need to get this down at the earliest and soonest opportunity. So how will that work? How quick will this content be taken down, in your view?
So it doesn't really matter how quick it's taken down, because if the algorithm is actually amplifying this content a lot, then even if it stays on one day, I saw like one video that got taken down, and in one day it got 6 million views because the algorithm promoted it a lot for one day. And then it got 6 million views. It was about Logan Paul, who went to the suicide forest in Japan and poked at dead people. And that was pretty disgusting, but YouTube pushed it towards 6 million views, if I remember correctly. So it doesn't matter how long it stays on the platform. What matters is how much the algorithm is amplifying it.
Here, Stephen Gilbert asks René de Rester about the importance of ensuring that AI moderation doesn't take down content that has a legitimate place online.
As I think it was Guillaume mentioned, there's the general rubric for moderation. They have three types of interactions. There's remove, right, which is where it actually comes down. But then there's also reduce, which is kind of what I'm describing with the idea that you can temporarily limit its distribution in the feed as you take the time to determine what is happening. And then the final piece is inform. And again, there too, you're potentially giving your fact checkers or others who are going to produce the counter content, if you will. In the case of election misinformation, that might be the relevant Secretary of State here in the US or whomever is the appropriate counterparty in the UK. would have the ability to say, no, this is a rumor and here's the fact, you know, and then so again, to append some sort of information. So rather than taking it down and creating a whole Second Life conspiracy theory around the censorship dynamic, you're instead taking the opportunity to move into an environment, into a kind of content transmission environment that lends itself better to reduce or inform.
And finally here, we hear from Laura Edelson explaining to me why, in her opinion, advertising should be in the scope of the online safety bill.
If a lot of adverts on sites like Facebook start off as organic posts, which are then boosted through paid promotion, that, as you say, that distinction between advertising and content that exists in other media doesn't really exist in the same way. And if anyways, if we had a regime where we regulated organic posting but not advertising, we'd actually be creating an incentive for people to boost the post through advertising.
Yeah, I would strongly encourage you to include advertising in, you know, in what is under oversight, because there just isn't an easy distinction to be made. And if you were to make that distinction, you would just be encouraging people to boost this content. And yeah, it would be a really perverse incentive.
I'm now joined by one of my fellow committee members, Tim Clement-Jones. Tim, it's great to have you on the podcast to discuss the inquiry so far. We really had a sort of deep dive in the most recent evidence session looking at the recommendation tools on social media and the way in which people are drawn to new content, and the fact that these work in a way which seems to be indiscriminate of the harm that content could cause. I mean, what was your feeling listening to the researchers that we spoke to about the way those tools have been designed and the harm they can cause?
It's almost, I mean, what we're trying to do is look at the design of the way these social media platforms operate. And the one word, the phrase that kept coming up was a business model for these social media platforms. So it's an integral part of the business model, it seems, the way these algorithms, these recommendation algorithms work. And, you know, their evidence, and of course, we've seen what Mariana Spring has had to say from the BBC about the way that, you know, it's clear that, in a sense, these algorithms do push particular content once they've latched onto your interests. And, you know, she set up this fake account called Barry. But this is one of the most difficult areas, and it demonstrated to me that you really do have to get to grips with how these algorithms work. And I think there's a big question mark over whether Ofcom's got enough powers in respect of the algorithm. I mean, even the ICO has made the point that they don't think that Ofcom has got quite the powers that it needs. And again, you know, how you look at the algorithm is a question in itself.
Absolutely right. But you're quite right to say that about the ICO. Elizabeth Denham said that she'd be sending in some written information, which we're looking forward to receiving, about how the powers the regulator, in this case Ofcom, would have could be improved. I think it was quite important discussing with Laura Edelson from New York University at our most recent hearing on the key point, I thought, that if you're a vulnerable person, the more vulnerable you are, the more likely you are to be a recipient of harmful content. So, you know, and that is quite chilling in effect. That's the basic problem with the way these systems are designed. They give you more of what they think you want, even if what you want isn't good for you.
Absolutely. And you know, to me, and you know, I'm very conscious that the Children's Code in the Data Protection Act will make quite a difference in ordinary internet communications. But I think this does bespeak the need for a design code promulgated by Ofcom to the social media platforms as part of the online safety bill. I think is going to be necessary because I do think you have to grapple with these issues across the board up front. It isn't just a question of the individual behavior of individual social media platforms.
I think that's right. I think something else that that we discussed as well, again, something that Laura Edelson brought up was this, I think she used the word porous, the porous nature between organic content and advertising. And that if someone posts a piece of organic content, often they will then put paid promotion behind it to boost that message in order to reach a wider audience. And that would mean that that message they posted had gone from being an organic posting to an advert, which would mean for the online safety bill, it was out of scope. And I think this is one of the things we need to be really careful of with this bill, that it doesn't create what could be seen as a very false distinction that a piece of content is harmful and requires removal if it's written on someone's page or in a group. But if it's in an advert, then it's absolutely fine.
I think you've absolutely put your finger on, and Laura did, on one of the two main gaps in the bill, basically. I think that area of paid advertising is extremely important. I think my question mark is which regulator should pick that up and run with it, basically. It's rather like the financial scams one. We know that we can include that, but the question is, you know, which is the appropriate regulator? And of course, the second big gap, and it's very cognate to current events, is this whole question of misinformation, disinformation, and societal harm, which you know, we have continued to discuss in the committee, and I think it is a big issue as far as the bill is concerned.
Yeah, I was interested to hear when René de Resta was talking to us about the role of human moderation around the Christchurch terrorist attack in New Zealand. Of the response from the companies was based on not just analysing, getting data on what had happened, but also people making judgments about whether this was a real and live event and what action should be taken. And I think that it was interesting, again, listening to Guillaume Chazelot about his experience at YouTube, that a lot of the tech companies have moved away from that kind of human moderation. They see it as being too expensive and that it's being done more by machines, and those machines are missing a huge amount. And this seems to me a sort of quite an important challenge here, that that human moderation is going to play a big part. It is more expensive than getting a machine to do it, but as yet, the machines don't seem capable of producing the sort of results we should expect.
Absolutely. And of course, this is an issue which is going to become increasingly important over time. You know, to what degree can you expect there to be a human in the loop, so to speak? And, you know, we're having that debate over data protection currently. And, you know, decisions made automatically by artificial intelligence systems, algorithmic decision making. So we're having that debate there. And I think we need to have that debate in the online safety area as well. I don't think it's enough at the moment simply to rely on automated algorithmic systems to pick up on some of these harms. I do think, and you mentioned the cost, you do need to expect the platforms to have that human in the loop.
Yeah. I mean, money's the one thing they're not short of. And it's interesting just reading in the press today, on the day we're speaking about, Facebook are looking to hire 10,000 people to work on its metaverse project. Well, if it can afford to do that, it can afford to pay for a few more content moderators.
Absolutely. And of course, that whole metaverse project, I mean, is going to be a minefield for online safety, even greater than it, but because of the immersive nature of what is being proposed and the harm that this immersion can do. I mean, that is going to be a whole new subject. And I suppose one of the questions that we will have to answer is whether or not our bill will be sufficiently broad to be able to take on board the harms created in that metaverse, so to speak.
It does. It's a good point, because things move very quickly, and we want to make sure that if we're legislating to create a regulator to deal with online harms, that it would have the power and scope to deal with emerging technologies, not just what we see today.
Yeah.
I was thinking broadcasting has to an extent been effective. The broadcasting code, Ofcom as an institution, I think has had the flexibility to adapt as new things have come along. But obviously, you know, we're now talking about a new world of content, most of which is online rather than on television. And for many people, will spend a huge amount of their leisure time in already on online, on social media, or gaming in a already a sort of semi-immersive experience.
Yes, I mean, one of the reasons why I think all of us have quite a degree of confidence in Ofcom being the regulator in these circumstances is precisely because of their experience. And, you know, I think they're very conscious about free speech issues because of their broadcasting experience. I think they're very adept at keeping up with new technology. They, after all, do regular surveys. So I have some confidence that Ofcom is not going to be left behind in all of this. But what we have to do is make sure they've got a broad enough remit and the ability to audit and monitor as necessary.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely right. Well, we've still got a lot of work to do before we get to our report. And Tim, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you, Damien.
You've been listening to the Infotagem podcast focused on the work of the Joint Select Committee on the Draft Online Safety Bill. It was hosted by me, Damien Collins, who's also the chair of the committee, and was produced by David Dugahy. Thank you. Until next time.